You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Inside Black and Gold, I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. We're going to bring in mystery guest number three, and that is Matt Miller. He's an NFL draft insider for ESPN. He was previously with Bleacher Report. You know, it's funny, I used to work for Bleacher Report as a copy editor back in like the early 2010s, or I guess not the early 2010s, like 2013, 2014. And I had edited several of Matt Miller's articles, and he was pretty good then. And I remember at the time, because that was like, that was a previous life of Bleacher Report where you had some high quality stuff and then you had some really sketchy stuff just filtering in from people who probably shouldn't be writing, you know? And so if you, it would stand out whenever I'd get one of his articles, cause I was like, no, this guy's legit. and then if it's not, so it's not a surprise to me that he's moved on to ESPN. He's a very well respected draft analyst, so it was good to catch up with him. But without further ado, let's play that clip.
Obviously, we are knee deep in mock draft season, and looking at yours at pick number 14 with the Saints, you've got them taking tight end Brock Bowers, which would be an awesome upgrade at the tight end position. Just what have you seen out of the Georgia prospect heading into the combine?
Oh my gosh, he's close to perfect as a tight end prospect. And I'll say this, he is a top 10 player in this draft, but because of positional value is available at this spot for the Saints. And I did look at this as a best player available type pick with the quarterbacks off the board. So that's a big part of that equation. But Bowers is a player I've compared him to George Kittle. I think that's the type of weapon you're getting offensively. Maybe not as accomplished as a blocker as Kittle is right now, but certainly has the ability to get better. He's strong. But, I mean, as a pass catcher, he's so versatile. And even at times for Georgia, he's running the ball out of the backfield. I mean, he's just such a dynamic asset in the offense. So he is someone that, you know, with changes offensively, I think there's going to be a need for that number two option in the passing game. And for me, Bowers can be that guy.
I think that's an interesting point, is like the positional value, because, you know, as you mentioned, so there's all these star tight ends in the NFL, but you look around and you're like Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, George Kittle, none of these guys were first round picks. So I guess, how do you kind of weigh that when you have, it's like, okay, this is a generational type tight end prospect, but at the same time, the value might not be there. And you look at it kind of similar to running backs, where it's like, yeah, Saquon Barkley has been a star, but has he been good enough to justify taking him number two overall, right? Kyle Pitts, for example, with the Falcons. I'm just curious, say, how do you kind of evaluate that when you look at a guy like Brock?
I think the nice thing about Brock, as opposed to someone, you know, like, and I know Saints fans know Kyle Pitts well, you play him twice a year. Brock is able to play in line. He's able to block. He's able to help in the run game. Whereas, you know, Kyle Pitts is he's a big wide receiver, basically. And that's not a knock on him. There's value in that. And if you look at his rookie year, and there's value in that. I think the difference is Kyle Pitts is a player you have to scheme for. Brock Bowers is not. He, to me, is more in the mold of someone like Sam Laporta, who was, you know, picked 34 last year, goes to the Lions, has a huge impact. He's, you know, someone a little bit more like TJ Hockenson, or in that Kittle mold of they're going to be on the field every down. And by virtue of their ability, you can move them around, but you don't have to put them in the slot. You don't have to get them in motion. They're a tight end that you can run your offense through. I don't want to compare anyone to Travis Kelce, because I think he's in kind of a tier by himself, what he's done the last 11, 12 years. But it's that idea. And I think that's why even last year we saw so many tight ends drafted in the first 100 picks. We saw eight of them, or nine maybe, in the first 100 last year, because teams are saying now, well, we can run our offense through the middle of the field, you know, with timing-based offense, with option routes. We've got quarterbacks who can move now. So I think Bowers does fit that mold of, we're rethinking the tight end position to where it is still valuable. I think, you know, you can look at what they're being paid. Tight ends are not as valuable as wide receivers based on how they're being paid. But, you know, we saw four teams in the conference championship games who you could make an argument their tight end is one of their most important assets in the passing game.
Protecting Derek Carr, obviously a big issue last season, and something the Saints are going to need to upgrade either through the draft or free agency. And I know this tackle class is chock full of some stud talent, maybe one of the best position groups in this year's draft. Do you see something that could shake out for the Saints in this draft in the early rounds where they could end up picking someone there?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, give up 35 sacks last year, something's got to give, you know. And unfortunately, the Trevor Penning pick has not panned out the way, you know, that you spent a first round pick on a guy, you're hoping he's a foundational piece. So I think so, yes. Long story short, what's interesting about this tackle class is there are two guys, and they're going to go really early, Joe Alt and Olu Fashanu. They're going to go top seven picks probably. After that, there's a lot of good tackles, but they're all right tackles. And obviously, Ryan Remchek's a pretty dang good right tackle. So you get into this conversation of, can we move a guy over? Can we move Talise Fuaga from Oregon State, who's a great right tackle? Can he flip sides? Or Amarius Mims from Georgia, who only started eight games in college, but I would say those eight games are as good a tape as any tackle in this class. Can he move? Could Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma make the move to left tackle? We saw him do that a little bit at the Senior Bowl. So because I think the need is more, I would argue, more specific to that left side, you start to look at the first round and say, you know, would we be better with a Brock Bowers? Would we be better with if one of the wide receivers falls? And then we get into, you know, later rounds looking at where's their good value with the left tackles. Someone like Patrick Paul from Houston, I think, is a really good option. He could be there at 45. Someone who had, you know, 6'7", really good mover. So not that first round pick, which we all want left tackles to be first round picks because you find such great players in that range. But I think round two this year is a spot where having that 45th pick is going to be really important, that maybe you're finding your left tackle a little bit later.
You know, those first round grades, I know you wrote about this recently where I think you said that you had 15 players or so with first round grades. And I think it is interesting because when you draft where the Saints are, you're at number 14. So it's like, if you have 15 players with first round grades, you can guarantee you get one of those players.
Yeah.
But is it one of the players at a position of need? And I think that's where you run into this ideology of, like, every team will probably say, hey, we're going to take the best player available. But a lot of time it's, hey, we'll take the best player available at a position we need, right? You're not necessarily fully in that mode. So I guess when you are looking at the board at number 14, do you have to be willing to just kind of let it come to you and go by your board? Or how do you look at that from a philosophical standpoint?
I'm a big believer in best player available at a position of need. You know, if the best player available is a fullback, you're not drafting, right? And it's like, you might have a perfect grade on a guard. Drafting a guard in the first round is hard for me just because of the positional value, you know, and the numbers say you can find a pretty good guard outside the first round. So I think you have to look at those core positions: quarterback, wide receiver, left tackle on offense, pass rusher, or a corner on defense is really where we're going to see a lot of the first round picks go. And I think for the Saints at 14, we're probably going to see four quarterbacks off the board. We're probably going to see three wide receivers off the board. And I think there's a good chance we're going to see three offensive tackles off the board. So, like, you're eliminating a lot of those premium positions. But the good news is, you know, one of the top corners could be there. One of the top pass rushers could be there. And even if you're not in a position to take one of them, it is going to give you a lot of good trade back opportunities. So, you know, I wouldn't advocate for some of the massive round one trades we've seen the Saints do in the past. But, you know, maybe you kick back three or four spots and get a little extra draft capital. And then you're more in the neighborhood of where you want to be for one of those tackles that you're going to have to move, or, you know, maybe the first guard comes off the board in the 20s. I think that's a more comfortable spot than 14 when you add in the extra draft capital that you would get from the trade back.
checking out the Saints pick in your the second round of your mock draft. Really like the pick. Jeff, you got to see Xavier Legette out at the Senior Bowl. Seems like a perfect replacement for a guy like Michael Thomas, who I don't think anyone is expecting back with the black and gold.
Yeah, and powerful. Kind of like Thomas in that mold of like he's just going to physically overpower you to get to the ball. Didn't run as well in person as I expected. I was a little surprised by that. But he does on tape show run after catch ability. And he has speed. You know, there are moves on his tape where he is, you know, putting a shoulder on a guy and then breaking away for a long run. So that ability there, when you have a Chris Olave, you can go with, I think, a more physical option opposite him, somebody that is going to be your, you know, a little bit of your power forward type wide receiver. And that's who Legette is. So again, trying to build out this team with that has a decent amount of needs and perpetual salary cap problems. I really went into this thinking, like, how can you turn something into a strength? You got an offense that was productive last year. It was the number 9 ranked offense in the NFL last year based on points. So how can you turn something into a strength? Shoring up the offensive line definitely is in mind, but getting Bowers and Legette, getting big body pass catchers that have run after catch ability could really open things up.
Sharp pivot here, but this is something I've been wondering about because, you know, I think when you're a team that's looking for kind of a nickel corner prospect in the draft, I think there's a disconnect between at times, okay, you played a ton in the slot in college versus you profile to the slot at the NFL level. Like a guy like Mike Sanders, still, he played a ton of the slot in college.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's like, yeah, you're the best, you're an NFL prospect. You're going to be put in the most premium position, which isn't always in the slot. So I'm curious if there are any either safety, cornerback prospects that you love in terms of transitioning to being a slot corner in the NFL as you kind of go through maybe the first three rounds of this draft.
Yeah, Sanders still is definitely one of them. Andrew Phillips at Kentucky is another one that I think fits that mold, and he'll probably be like a early third round pick, but he had a great Senior Bowl week. I mean, his instincts, his closing ability, like they scream inside player to me, but he's tough enough to play inside. 5'10", 190 pounds is the reason that he's probably looked at as an inside guy as opposed to an outside because all the skill sets there. So he definitely fits that mold. Jeremy Jones, Florida State, a little bit of a not late round, but later, probably round 5. Another guy that I think fits that mold of just going to be a really, really good nickel for a long time. And there's so much value in that, that he definitely fits that group as well.
ESPN's Matt Miller, thank you again. Definitely looking forward to more of your stuff coming out with the NFL Combine cranking up.
You bet, guys. Thanks so much.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, thanks again to Matt Miller for coming on. And you know, we can go back right to the beginning of that interview. You asked him about this. He put out a mock draft in at the number 14 overall pick. He had the Saints landing Brock Bowers. And you know, you can talk all you want about positional value, and we did, you know, we did talk about positional value, but I, you know, it's like he's like, oh man, I really want a left tackle, man, I really want an edge rusher. I would be very much fine with the Saints being like, give me Brock. And you look at it and you say, okay, why is a tight end that valuable at the NFL level where you take them in the first round, particularly top half of the first round? And conventional wisdom would say no, and recent history would say no, because even the guys you talk about, like the Travis Kelce's, the Mark Andrews, right, the Sam Laportas, these guys weren't first round picks.
Right.
But I do think Brock is that good. And I do think this offense, one of the keys to this offense is unlocking the middle of the field. And I don't think you've been able to do it as well as you want to. I still like Juwan Johnson. I think he's still going to be, even if you draft Brock, he's still going to be a major piece of this offense. But I think Brock is just a bit more versatile from as a Y tight end, as an inline tight end, that you're not tipping your hand as much when you put him on the field. And I would love that pick personally if he got there.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little about, obviously, no one's expecting Michael Thomas back. A big physical target for Derek Carr could only help this offense for sure. And then you mentioned with Juwan, I know the Saints like him. Obviously, he just got, you know, paid, but add a little spark under him to maybe even, you know, boost what he's doing even more, because it's like, all right, we got this guy coming in. I got to show myself again.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that you want is you're asking yourself, okay, is he a valuable player? Is he a competent NFL tight end that you can run out there and have success with? And I think the answer is yes, but what is his ceiling? And I think if you're looking at this and you're saying, okay, we really want an elite top end tight end option to help unlock this offense and to give Derek Carr a safety valve and just a weapon in the middle of the field. I just think that's such a significant upgrade, and it's no offense to Juwan. I love Juwan, but you know, like I think you went UDFA shopping, right? And you found a guy who is much better than you probably ever would have thought coming out of college at what he's doing. He converted from wide receiver to tight end. He's done a great job, and he's going to be a piece of this offense, whether you have Brock or not. But I don't think that his existence on the roster would make you say, ah, we're set at tight end. We don't need a tight end when you have the elite option on the board. And you know, the other thing we talked about, it's like you're drafting at 14. So you don't necessarily have the luxury of being able to say, well, this is who we want, right? You have first round grades, and it depends how many you have, but you get to 14 and it's not a question of which of the first round grades you want. It's which of the first round grades is still on the board, you know? And so I don't think Brock's going to get there. So it might not even be a conversation they have to have when they get to on the clock at 14. But I think that, you know, positional value, need versus want, you know, you're going to take the best player available, but are you always taking the best player available if it's at a position you don't need? I don't know, but I'm okay with that. The other pick was Xavier Leggett, the wide receiver out of South Carolina. He's a guy we talked about when I came back from the Senior Bowl. Like I really appreciated what he was able to do out there. Just a big physical guy. I don't think as polished as a Mike Thomas when he came out of Ohio State, but they can do a lot of the same things. And so if you're trying to find a way to replace him in the offense, another second round pick wouldn't be a terrible spot to try to do that. And that's not necessarily to say it has to be Leggett, but I don't hate the idea of, you know, finding a new weapon, new big physical, big bodied weapon. So I like both those picks. I think he's on the right track. I think you are going to spend some draft capital on offense this year.
It was interesting though. The two picks were on offense from Miller, but not on the offensive line. It was just adding more weapons for Derek Carr.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's going to be a really difficult hurdle to get over. If you're, you know, you're looking at an Olu Fashanu or like a Fuanga drops, right. And you're just like, oh, but I really want Brock though. And you're going to have like the tight ends coach. You're going to Clancy's being like, guys, you see this guy? You watched some Georgia games over the last few years, right? You don't think it's the guy we should have? And then, you know, the offensive, you know, and then John Benton's going to be like, get out of here.
Yeah, poor Clancy's like, with last year's tight end class, we got nobody.
It is going to be interesting, though, because you do have a new offensive staff. So who's going to be the loudest? Yeah. You know, right. Who's going to have the most conviction? And it's not only the position coaches, right? There's this whole scouting element involved here. And they're going to have their grades and their reports. And, you know, but at the end of the day, the position coaches have to have some input and some feedback. And like, that's why you'll see in the war room, you'll see like, oh, they pick a cornerback out of Tennessee, and the D-backs coach is like, yes, you know, got him. And then the other guy's like, son of a bitch. Anyway, but so we'll see. But I thought that was a lot of great insight from Matt. You know, he gave us some insight into the nickel corners. I think that's going to be an interesting market. I don't know if that's something you look at first two rounds, but like, for example, CJ Gardner-Johnson was a fourth round pick. You can find high quality nickel cornerback prospects in the third, fourth, fifth round. So like, those are some guys that I think you want to look at, whether they handle in free agency or not. But yeah, that's it. Anything else from you?
No, just the fact that, you know, mock draft season, obviously in full swing, and man, oh man, there's been so many different outcomes for the Saints I've seen at number 14. It's pretty wild right now, from offensive lineman, tight end, defensive end. It's all over the place.
No, there's so many different paths they can take. And that's a good thing, because at 14, like what we talked about, you don't get to pick your path. The path arrives and you take it.
Right.
Right. So the fact that there's, you know, like, I think this is a deep enough draft where sitting at 14, you don't feel like you have to make a move, but you can if you really love a guy. But I just, like, if you do that, you better be right. this, you better not be guessing at all if you're going to make a move up the board, knowing what we know and knowing about the assets they have and the misses they've had in the first round over the last few years. And so, like, and I think this is a big draft. I really do. Like, I think, you know, you don't need a 2017, but you got to get something. You know, you need multiple contributors out of this draft, however that shapes up. You need to be able to add young, affordable talent on the first 2 days of the draft. You only have two picks right now because you don't have a third rounder. So
I will say, with the lack of success with those early round picks that this team has had, unfortunately, of late, I was surprised to see that the Justin Matthews, their pro scout, the national scout, Mike Ball, and the area scout, Casey Talley, and Ireland won the Inside the League scouting awards. It's like, how did that happen?
No, they scout well. It's not we get really caught up in the first round grades.
Yeah.
I don't know if the scout, you know, the true value of the scouts isn't, you know a lot about the first round guys. Like, it's those are the guys you are overloaded with information about. But what about the Rashid Shaheeds, right? What about, you know, Marcus Colston, right? Guys like that, guys that show up, Jawan Johnson, right? Guys that you didn't expect to get a ton of value out of, and you are, Carl Granderson, right? That, like, those, that's where scouts really make their money. The top end evaluators are not always the same. Like the area scouts, guys who find Caden Ellis, right? So that's where you make your money as a scout. Now, the selection process, I think, in terms of these top end grades, comes down to these interviews, and I think that's where you get a lot of insight into these younger guys or these top end guys. But no, it is funny because you're going to see a lot of grief levied at the scouts because of a guy like Trevor Penning, because of a guy like Peyton Turner, Marcus Davenport. But when you look at the overall picture, you found a lot of, you know, you got Alvin Kamara in the third round, you got Michael Thomas in the second round, like you got Marcus Williams in the third round, right? You got Teron Armstead. Like, there's a lot of really, really effective scouting going on, and it goes back a long time. But yeah, it would be helpful if you didn't miss in the first round.
Yeah, with the picks of an early defensive end or offensive lineman, it kind of gives, I know, a lot of Saints fans PTSD kind of thing, considering what's happened in the past.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I do want to play the Trevor Penning clip from Dennis Allen just to kind of bridge off of what Matt said. Because I do think that it's this answer was interesting. Let's listen.
Yeah. How important this offseason is for Penning, just considering it's his first offseason where he really gets to work on technique?
Yeah, look, I think it's huge. I think, here's the good news. The good news is that, you know, he's coming in with a clean slate. He's coming in healthy. So he's going to have an opportunity to go through a full offseason program, both from a lifting perspective and from a practice perspective. And I think those are two critical things when you're talking about, you know, still a young guy. I know this is going into his third year, but he missed basically his whole rookie season. And then last year, he missed all the offseason program before, you know, being put in as a starting left tackle. So I think this is going to be an important offseason for him. And I think being able to start on a clean slate with a lot of new eyes on you, I think will be beneficial for him.
Is another one where it's like, he's being honest there. And I don't even know if he intended to be as honest as he was, but so you're talking about a clean slate for a guy.
Yeah.
So who does he have a clean slate with?
The new offensive line coach.
Yeah. So this is something that I wondered about throughout the season. And I think you're kind of getting indications now of, like, I don't think Doug Marrone liked Trevor very much at all. You know, I don't think that they worked well together. I just don't think that SIST program, you know, that development plan, whatever, was working. And I think that the coaching staff was aware of that. And so hopefully that's what you know, if you're trying to look at the bright side of, like, how can we still hope for Trevor Penning to return some of that investment as a first round pick, it's that it just was not working last year. He didn't have a training camp. It just didn't, the development wasn't there. You got benched. So hopefully he can come back this offseason, do the work he needs to do, have a coach that maybe understands him a little better and can get more out of him. That's what the hope is. And that's what I think the team is hoping for. But yeah, I did think that, you know, the clean slate thing was interesting.
Yeah, that definitely stood out to me too. And right away went to, all right, new coach, fresh slate, right? Like you said.
Yeah. And hopefully that's true. Hopefully that is what happens. If not, man, that's going to look like a real bad pick. And it already does, but it's going to look even worse. Because right now he's 2 years in. He's still got 2 years on that rookie deal. If you can get a productive player over the next 2 years, you'll start to look at that pick a little differently. But it's got to happen. So we'll see. But I agree that this is a huge offseason break.
We got to worry about one tackle with a knee issue, and then the other tackle has feet issues.
But yeah, that's why if Ryan's knee issue is less of a concern, then I can handle the right side or the left side of the line.
Yeah.
But all right, let's wrap up this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about what Jeff Ireland said, more combine-related stuff. Then we'll get out of your hair. But for now, this is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. We'll be right back.